Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And this is volume two of a great, I hope, metaphysical and spiritual show about our universe and how it really works. I'm going to tonight, I hope, encapsulate in a very short time what we went over in volume one, which is last week's. There's going to be some differences between the two shows, to say the least, because last week I was going over the concepts of the universe and why it is the way it is. This week I'm going to go more into the mechanics and talk about how physics, as I understand physics today. Now, you got to understand, I'm not claiming to be the world's greatest physicist, but I know something about physics. And I'm going to explain a bit about what physics today, as best as they understand it, and I understand what they understand, that they being scientists who are physicists, know. And then I'm going to fill in the blanks and explain it based upon additional metaphysical concepts that will explain some of the things that are missing. Yes, they're missing from modern physics in general. And I think after I fill in those blanks, if you happen to tune into like the science channel on cable or satellite television, I think you'll appreciate the difference of these two sides and be able to fill in yourself. It's kind of neat when you're able to do that, because you can say, oh, I know why it's that way, or how it could be that way, different from what is presently not understood. And it'll give, I think, the listeners, all of you out there, a chance to maybe sum up and understand your environment and what goes on a daily basis. Because this is really practical, even though it's big cosmology. It's the study of the entire cosmos. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. And how a creator or God fits into that huge idea. Because, as I stated last week, the creator of our universe really came about, it's self-created, by working within, we'll say, an infinite realm of possibilities. And from that infinite realm of possibilities, a number of choices with similar direction simply and literally came together to produce a mind that was able to limit the field of infinite possibilities to a much more limited field, one in which it could become a creator. That creator then said, hey, I'd like to have a universe that would be an interesting place for me to hang out, and also a place where I can hopefully do something besides just hanging out, do something that will create more of who I am, but do so without interfering with whatever it is that is creating more of me, and do so in a way that fosters further creation among all these new things. Those new things were life. That's right. So the creator said, hey, I'd like to have life, and life will create more of me if it chooses to, and if it chooses not to, so be it, because I give life freedom of thought, which is what I have myself, and freedom of thought is the first condition, the very first element to the creator's choices about what life shall have. Beyond freedom of thought is the freedom to create and the freedom to make sacrifices if it chooses to create more of other life and help other life to be creative. Wow, what a great idea. Sort of like the pay it forward approach to creating universes, if you're familiar with that movie. And it's very interesting because, from last week, again, I'm summing this up, if we look at this process, it is almost, to me, it's like spine-tingling that a creator could be so amazingly simple but so amazingly wise to provide a universe in which that which it creates creates more of it in average, and some of those things create a lot more of it, and others create a lot less or none of it. But it gives it this fascinating perspective that it is not running a puppet show, and that all of life is there to become as great or greater, if it's possible, than it is itself at some point in the future. This is an amazing, we'll say, procreative process, not too different than us having children. I mean, if you think about this, this is like having children on a very vast scale, we'll say, because every part of life is a prodigy of its creator. Something to consider. And it also reflects very much on our experience as human beings. Also from last week, I mentioned that human beings are special because we can recognize, with the first part of life, I should say, that can recognize what I just explained. You see, other parts of life can do good things and even can love some things that are similar to it, but they can't love their creator. They can't even recognize there is a creator. Human beings can do this, and this is so amazing that we can. That's the reason I'm on the air talking to you, right? Because if we couldn't do that, I guess I'd be talking about something else entirely. And we can do it because we have senses that allow us to understand and to create more, both of our creator. And these senses are connected to consciousness, so we can choose and we can understand what we're doing about our creations of, I'll call it virtue or light, I like those words, that create more of our creator. And no life less than human, when I say less than lower in kingdom, such as animals or plants, and certainly not minerals, can do this. We are the first part of life that can do it, but it doesn't mean we're the only part. It doesn't mean there aren't greater life forms, greater ones, that are capable of achieving that amazing result. And then another little tidbit I threw out last week for those of you who were listening and for those of you who weren't, well, this will help you catch up, is that in this grand process that I'm discussing, we really have an amazing capability of co-participating together in it to really collectively raise our consciousness and as a group of people, choose to enlighten ourselves and others as best as we can, but without changing how they think by force or by intimidation, but rather by education. Oh, what a wonderful thing. Amazing. And, of course, that's on a volunteer basis, always. And so the amazing thing about this is that we have these tremendous capabilities that are at our disposal to achieve fantastic growth in ourselves and concomitantly, that means together with, God, so that we grow while it grows, and it's just a fantastic thing. There's no end to it. There is no end. God came from an infinite field of possibilities, and therefore there is no technical beginning, and there is no real end, because from infinity, it leaves an infinite possibility of growth, and there is no end because there is an infinite number of possibilities from which God came from. And each of us can choose to do the same. I also mentioned last week that there could be, and I think there are, other gods, but they are not part of our universe. Do not believe that. And don't believe there are parallel universes either. That doesn't work. And I'll explain it very quickly by saying, if you have a bunch of parallel universes and we're all jumping through from one to another and different things are happening in each universe, God's thought and God's gift to us of the plan of this universe kind of falls by the wayside and it turns into a bunch of nonsense, really. I don't want to go too deeply into that because I explained more of it last week. You can listen to it in the archives. But nonetheless, that's the general conclusion I came to. And finally, I want to talk about containers, because that's going to lead us to today's subject. I think that our universe, by most standards, is judged by the third part of God's mind, which has to do with activity. And activity, when it is not purely intelligent, separates time and space and becomes energy. It actually manifests as energy. And energy is the container of life. Very much necessary, because the thought of life, which I call spirit when it's along God's thinking to some extent, that thought, when joined with the container, has a purpose. The purpose is to bring the container to the level of God's thinking that is already contained within spirit and beyond. It's sort of like bringing together two pieces to produce something that's greater than both of them. A very wonderful thing. It's called fusion in physics, and it's also called the same in metaphysics. The wonderful part about this is that when this takes place, the fascination is that spirit is joining with body or form or energy, and it is producing what we normally consider to be life, but it is also producing an element that allows life to be grown. You see, it allows life to actually exceed what it begins as. And this was one of the plans or thoughts of God to begin with. And so we want that to stay. And if you just have parallel universes, my God, there could be some that that doesn't happen in. What if you get stuck in one of those? Well, you would cease to exist because life couldn't exist there. That doesn't make much sense. And if you did it randomly and on an average, eventually all of us would end up no place fast. I don't think I want to do that. And I don't think a creator of this universe would either. That's only one thing to think about. I'm just adding these in here because there's lots of reasons why parallel universes don't work. But they are an interesting idea because they do point to the idea that there's infinite possibilities, and there could be infinite universes, but within a universe, the thought of the creator limits the field of that universe to its general big choices that have a general principle that affects all life, but doesn't change the ability for life itself to have independent and free thinking. Very important understanding. That's somewhat paradoxical, and you've got to think it through so you don't get confused by it. If you do, you know what? You can give me a call. Yes, you can. I didn't mention this, but you can call me over at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. Please do it. I would love to hear from you. You can stop me from yakking. Yes, it's okay. I'll talk with you instead of about the subject. And you can also call me at 888-815-9756 if you're in Canada only, and you can reach me from there. Hey, two numbers, gets here, and we'll put you on the air, and we can chat about whatever you'd like to, although it might be something about this show as well. Okay, so how do we move forward from last week? Last week I gave you a very fast thumbnail of what went on last week. But for this week, we're going to talk about how the universe is understood in, the best I understand, the best theories that exist in physics today. Let me give you some of those ideas. The first is that in the very beginning, they claim, there was a thing called the Big Bang. What's a Big Bang? Well, it's sort of, well, it's definitely bigger than a small bang, right? Just being a little joke there. Yeah, Big Bang is that suddenly a tremendous, huge, beyond all comprehension amount of energy was put into an extremely, extremely small, zero, literally, amount of space, the space you couldn't even measure. And it was done from some unknown place for some unknown reason. Does this sound like it's all together? Well, not exactly. Now, there are some people who are called string theorists. I'll tell you what they think. They think that vibrations, I'm thinking of good vibrations, vibrations that are coming from dimensions that are 10 dimensions, total 11, if you count this one, beyond where we are right now, are trickling down. And these vibrations are caused by vibrating strings that are just almost infinitely small that are bumping into each other. And as they bump into each other, they eventually produce this magical energy that suddenly compresses to a very, very small point called a singularity. Follow with me now. I know these are hard things to pick up so quickly if you haven't heard them before. And from this singularity, it becomes extremely unstable. And within a billionth of a second, the singularity goes bang. And from it comes all the energy, supposedly, that it is going to exist within our universe. That's what the string theorists think. Not all physicists agree with that, but they don't have other theories that can explain it any better. So everybody sort of sits around and looks at each other and says, well, I don't agree with you, but I don't have a better idea. Okay, fine. That's what physics kind of says about the beginning of our universe. Now, there are other theories out there. I don't want you to think that I'm telling you the entire scope of them, because it's about as many theories as there are physicists, since nobody seems to be able to figure it out in a way that doesn't have paradoxes and contradictions and starts with just the magic, it just happened. Well, that's kind of not a good way to have a science, because it doesn't really explain anything. It's probably not much different than having faith or religion. And I'll tell you, I like the religious ideas better, because they're definitely more interesting than the present physics ideas are. Interesting that they have something to say to us more about how the universe really is. Okay, so that's what technically most of physics is about. It's about particles, and these little particles become something else. And it's a kind of a strange thing. You either start with waves or you start with particles. But either way, it doesn't matter whether you start with waves or particles, you're starting with only one-third of what I call the mind of God, which is the container of life or energy. Whether it's a wave or a particle, it's still energy. Either way, it doesn't make any difference. And the interesting thing is that a fellow named Heisenberg, who I mentioned last week, he discovered that energy could be a wave or it could be a particle, and it really depends upon how you think about it. That's right. If people change the way they think, energy can change into a particle, and particles can change into, energy can be particles, and it can change back into waves and vice versa. How crazy is that? So it really, it's like arguing two sides of the same coin to say whether something is a particle or a wave. It doesn't really make any difference, because neither really explains the whole picture. Okay, now, after this big bang, about 300 million years later or so, the energy that is running around has clumped together and has formed atoms. Well, we know what atoms are. They have things called bosons that eventually turn into protons and neutrons, and before long you got electrons. Pretty interesting stuff. Yeah, all that's going on. And eventually, the atoms, when they get crunched together, start producing photons, and that's light, by the way, and they start creating fusion, which makes, very interestingly, stars. But there has been a little glitch put into this theory recently, and I think you'll find this fascinating. They now believe that at the same time that some stars were being created, so was a thing called a super, that means huge, like millions of times larger than a normal one, black hole. You might say, well, what's a black hole? Well, if you think about it in terms of physics, as it presently understands it, nobody knows. That's right. They don't know what a black hole is. They just know that they probably almost certainly exist. What does it do? Well, it collects so much gravity that it stretches and stretches and stretches space-time until it tears it. What's a tear in space-time? Nobody knows. But it does tear space-time. And they don't know what happens after things tear. Now, there's a guy named Stephen Hawking who last year decided to reinvent a theory he did 30 or 40 years ago. And he says that when you tear space-time, you enter other parallel universes. But I already explained that that doesn't make any sense. It's interesting, though, that he came up with this 30 or 40 years after he came up with a contradictory and opposite theory. Talk about really going to the other side, he did. Well, it's okay, because probably neither side is right. As a matter of fact, I'm almost certain neither side is right, because I do know what a black hole does, and I will explain it. But remember, I'm telling you in this first segment, which actually I've gone over as I look at my clock by about 3 or 4 minutes. Oh, no, did I really do that? Oh, I've been so... Okay. Anyway, we're going to have to go to a break. I got yakking, didn't I? I've been very good about breaking in about 17 minutes. Okay, well, anyway, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, and I hope they're listening out there so they know that. And then we'll continue on with this great story.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. ViroPel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about ViroPel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. ViroPel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of ViroPel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives ViroPel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase ViroPel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit ViroPel, that's ViruPel.org.
Okay, we are back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And now we have a very interesting situation, and that is, in looking at our universe, there is something going on called super black holes that are being created from huge, huge, huge clouds of all kinds of, we'll call it, mostly hydrogen, but maybe some helium atoms, and then other kinds of particles or pieces of atoms running around. And these huge, huge clouds, I mean, they're bigger than any of the present galaxies, are starting to condense onto each other and sometimes form even bigger ones. And as they condense and get smaller and smaller because of gravity, you know what gravity is like, they start pulling themselves together and getting tighter and tighter and tighter until the middle part becomes like super composed of many, many, many stars, that eventually the stars get crushed together and they actually become a super massive black hole that is just nothing more than a field of gravity that is so strong that it tears apart space and time, and at the same time, it starts eating away some of the galaxy, but it does something else. It's just amazing. While it's eating some of the galaxy, it's causing large numbers of other parts of the galaxy to instantly form stars that would take millions, if not hundreds of millions of years to form on their own. So it's sort of like a progenitor. It produces stars and galaxies. It's a generator of stars at a very rapid rate. So what used to be the theory that it would take a billion years or longer for many stars to be created in the galaxy, stars could be created in a few million years once there would be a super massive black hole in the center of the galaxy. It acts as an agent of producing more and more stars, as long as they're far enough away from what it's called its event horizon, the point at which it will suck the star in, and then, of course, the star is not going to become anything. But the amazing thing is that many, many stars are beyond this event horizon, and those get formed very quickly by the intense gravitational field produced by this supermassive black hole. So it produces, a huge number of stars, and then something else remarkable takes place. After it produces the stars, they get spun out. They literally get spun out from where they were, which wasn't too far away from where the black hole was, out to the outer edge of the galaxy, and that causes the galaxy to start to rotate in sync with the way the black hole is or was, and the two of them become connected through this kind of progeneration made by the black hole, because they discovered that, just what I just said, that the outside of galaxies are connected to black holes when they shouldn't be, because black holes don't have enough gravitational effect, these supermassive ones, to control the outside of the galaxies, are just too far away, yet they are all connected and all moving in sync with their mother or father, black hole, in the center of the galaxy. And the explanation is that once these stars are made so quickly, they get spun out and they become in sync, so to speak, with their creator, the supermassive black hole. Sound interesting. Yeah. Now, what I just told you has barely been conjectured in the last few months to a year by some physicists, and I think it is very accurately true, but there's a metaphysical reason to convince me of that, which I will get to again during today's show. Talk about a cliffhanger, huh? We're talking only about the physics part first. And then I'm going to fill it in with what I think is the metaphysical part, which I think is so much more interesting. But I hope that this part is interesting enough to keep your attention. Now, if you would love or like, or even if you don't want to, if you want to give me a phone call, do so. And we can chat about this or anything else. If you're a physicist and you disagree with me, give me a call. It's okay. I don't mind. Just be gentle, Remember, my background in physics is from a standpoint of a person who has mostly learned through self-teaching, not through going through a formal program, although I wasn't technically, yes, I was into a physics program at one time. It was a long, long time ago before any of this stuff was known about and before really any of this stuff was really even thought of, so it wouldn't count. Yeah, I'm giving away my age now. That's right. I was going to college in the 60s, yep, that's when I was going to college. So that's to give you an understanding, if you are a physicist, what my knowledge level will be from formal training. Okay, so if we consider now, in looking at all this situation, it would be important for us to realize then that there's a new model in which galaxies are being formed by something that is completely, almost like within the last 12 months, new, the supermassive black holes, new at least in terms of how they function. Yes, they've known about them for a few years. They knowing how they function is like just virtually right yesterday almost. And they're still not sure about some of the things that I'm explaining to you. Okay, so what else goes on then? Well, eventually, these supermassive black holes, when they are building themselves up and feeding, so to speak, on the energy in their in their vicinity, around their event horizon, are spewing out so much energy while they're doing this, because some of the energy doesn't go all into the black hole. Some of it shoots out in two directions at the same time and produces something called a quasar. You may have heard that word before, but they didn't know what quasars were until just recently, until they discovered what super black holes were. They just thought, well, they're very strange things because they're producing more energy than anybody can understand. But now they understand where it's coming from. It's coming from these supermassive black holes. How big is a supermassive black hole? Well, they average from a few million times the size of our sun to tens and even maybe 100 million times the size of our sun in terms of how much energy they have gulped down. That's a lot of gulping. Think about our sun, and there's a lot of energy in our sun. It's like 100 million of them. That would be a lot of suns, and all gulped down by one of these very obviously hungry, super massive black holes. Now, there are regular black holes, by the way, that happens when a star is in its dying time, yeah, and it, while it's dying, it produces a regular black hole, which is just like our sun, although it may not and probably will not produce a black hole, but there are other suns that are a little more massive that will. And when they produce a black hole, the sun becomes the size of, well, if you can imagine it, a few miles across. You know, our sun is huge, I mean, compared to the Earth, many, many, many thousands of times larger than the Earth. And yet, it would turn into the size of a mile or two in diameter, and that would be the size of the black hole of the star, something a little larger than our sun. Wow, that's an awful lot of energy in a very small place, and all that energy creates tremendous amounts of gravity that tears space and time, whatever that means, but I'm going to explain it to you. Okay, so the amazing part about this scenario is that as they discovered all the things I've just been telling you about, something else has been brewing. First, in the 1970s and early 80s, they discovered that there was a problem in the universe as they knew it, and that was there was not enough energy to explain how galaxies even formed in the first place, including how they produced the supermassive black holes. And eventually, some guy said, well, we'll just invent something that will produce this effect. And what they invented is something called dark matter. Yeah, nobody's ever seen it. They've been looking for it since the 70s, and they haven't found it. But they decided just to invent it, because if they didn't invent the dark matter, there wouldn't be enough energy to produce the galaxies or supermassive black holes or anything else, and we'd all be not here, according to physics. Well, of course, that wouldn't work, because if we're not here, then how can we not be here figuring out that it isn't working? So someone finally said, well, we'll just have to invent something, and they came up with dark matter. Now, that was all well and good, and eventually everybody kind of accepted the dark matter, although they can never find it, and they haven't yet. But at least it works mathematically to support that there could be enough gravity to produce all the galaxies that are around. And there's, by the way, if you really want to know, there's a couple hundred billion galaxies. That's billion with a B, galaxies with up to a couple hundred billion stars per galaxy. And then who knows how many planets per star. It's mind-boggling. Yeah. You go back to the program where I talked about, is there intelligent life out there in other worlds? This is a few weeks ago. And listen to that show, and I think you'll get the idea. Yes, there must be, because believe me, with that number of planets and stars and galaxies, et cetera, if there isn't, we have got the super lottery of all universes with that many numbers and no other life besides Earth. Holy cow, that would be some amazing thing. What a trip that would be. No, it's not that way. Okay. And I explain why, et cetera, in metaphysical terms as well. All right. Now, we've only got about a minute and a half, over 2 minutes to go till commercial again, because I went over on that first one. This time I'm not going to do it. I'll be good, I promise. All right. And so I do want to preface what I'm going to go into in the next segment, and that is that we're going to, I'll finish up quickly this business about the next thing, which is called dark energy. We talk about dark matter. I'm going to talk about dark energy. I'll go in a few minutes about that. And you thought dark matter was strange because they never found that. What did I tell you about dark energy? Oh, you're going to love it, because they have found something else that's even weirder than the fact there wasn't enough energy to produce galaxies. And that was nothing compared to what they discovered at the end of 1997 and into 1998. It just, everybody went crazy, and physics kind of started falling apart, and it's still going kind of nutty since then. And because of that, it kind of leaves an opening for you-know-who, me, to talk about really strange things, because after all, if they can't get even the slightest thing going in terms of a theory any longer because of strange effects that they've discovered, that allows me to come in here and yak to you about stuff that may be really far out, which we're going to talk about in the next segment when we come back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds or so. And now remember, I'm going to finish this up with the dark energy, so you will hear about that, and then we're going to go into metaphysics, the real thing, the real reasons that all of this stuff is taking place. 2 minutes and 30 seconds. I'll be back.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
Okay, and we're coming back now from break. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today's show, we're going to finish up on Volume 2 of How the Universe Really Works. That's assuming that I have a clue. I hope I do. But I was trying to tell you in the last segment that the physicists that I'm familiar with, and even some I'm not, don't seem to have clues. They have cluelessnesses, if there is such a word. And they are in a state of quandary, because about 1997-98, there was a discovery that really rocked the entire physics community and astrophysics and just about everybody else who knew anything about science, and that was that it was always thought that the universe was going to expand out forever and gradually slow down and get slower and slower and slower, and it would never come together, or it was going to go so far like a big rubber band, and there would be enough gravity to suddenly squeeze it back together again, and there would be another kind of big bang. Everybody kind of liked that one because it would be something like a yo-yo, you know, up and down, up and down. Yeah, and so that was a kind of a favorite theory for a while. But nobody really except me, now I know that doesn't sound humble, but I wrote this in 1993. That was 5 years before they discovered it, and I knew about it before. I was teaching about it before that the universe would be expanding at a continually increasing rate. In other words, it's going to keep growing, but it's getting faster in its growth. Now, that kind of shocked everybody, because there isn't enough energy that anybody knows about to produce this effect. It was like, well, where's that coming from? And so that's what was discovered, and it was actually proven within a very short time, actually within a year or two, there was enough proof to support that the universe is, in effect, and really expanding at greater levels every minute. It's just going a little bit faster all the time. And what does that mean? Well, nobody quite understands what it means, but it sure looks like some things are going on that cannot be explained using what is called the standard model in physics that follows a very famous physicist's general theories and specific theories of Albert Einstein's. And the funny thing about it is that Albert came up with this idea that the universe might be expanding at a faster and faster rate. And he looked at it, and he looked at it, and he looked at it some more, and he gave it a name called the cosmological constant, meaning that it's going to keep growing but at a constant, right? But then it started to fiddle with what he called general relativity. He had problems. His theory of general relativity meant, the way he opposed it, was that it was called a theory in which there was symmetry. That when physics happened on Earth, it would happen someplace else in another galaxy the same way, according to his model of general relativity. And that he liked that. He liked this symmetry model. And the cosmological constant put a glitch in it. It actually opened the door to the possibility, even the probability, almost a certainty, that there would be asymmetry in physics. And boy, did that upset him. Well, eventually he just said, oh, it's the biggest mistake I ever made. I think I'll throw it out, and let's just forget it. I never said it. Goodbye. Okay. And everybody did kind of forget it until 1998. And then some people said, well, how in the heck are we going to explain the fact that the universe keeps growing, growing, growing? And wasn't that something that Einstein said, like in the 1920s? Wasn't he talking about that thing? I came up with it like in 1918, and he, for 10 years, played around with it. And people went back and he started to read his original stuff about the cosmological constant, and sure enough, that was it. But unfortunately, it still means that asymmetrical physics is something that we're going to have to start thinking about. Now, most physicists are not too happy about this. And as a matter of fact, most of them will argue till their death almost that it can't be true. But now it's time for me to lower the boom on them. Yeah, I've got about 11 minutes here to tell you that, guess what? Physics is not only asymmetrical, it is barely symmetrical anywhere except within the etheric, or I'll call it electromagnetic, physical universe that we can see and understand from our perspective. If you go anywhere outside of that little tiny small fraction of our real universe that we live in, you'll find that physics is definitely asymmetrical. What does that mean? Well, something called the alpha constant, you heard me use that word before, changes. That's alpha means the first constant. It means like everything that all of physics rests on changes. Time and space change. Dimensionality change. Yes, go back to some of the few earlier shows that I've done on BBS, or go back to many of the shows I did on KXAM, and you'll hear all about it. And it turns out that there are multiple dimensions of time and space that life itself lives in and through, and that is the key to this whole process. What is it that is creating the expanding universe? Well, it isn't dark energy, which is what they presently call it. It's some kind of foggy energy that's around but not exactly part of our universe. It's sort of like around everything in our universe, but it's really not part of it. Well, that is actually called intelligent activity in metaphysics, and it's equally dispersed through all parts of the universe. I wrote about that in 1990. And because it's equally dispersed, it will cause any part of the universe to expand at increasing rates. Absolutely. I'm not kidding you. That's the truth. And the physics for it is in Chapter 10 of Life's Hidden Meaning, which is a textbook on this subject. Honestly, yeah, it's amazing. And there's a connection between black holes, remember I talked about black holes, and super black holes, and this whole effect. Super black holes are circulating energy from one dimension to another. And there aren't 11 dimensions, there's actually 7, but several of the 7 are split up so it looks like there's 11. It's okay, I don't care. It doesn't bother me if you want to call it 50 dimensions. And each dimension that of these 7 dimensions is divided in 7 different ways. That's another story, another day. I know we just don't have enough time today for it. But the point is that the universe is so much more interesting, and it allows for greater growth of each of us. It allows us to expand in our development from one dimension to another. It allows there to be a very difficult place to grow and develop in, which is where we are right now. We're in the basement. Yep, we are. This is the hardest, most difficult place that we can develop more of our creator into. And it's a good place for us to start, but luckily it's not the place we end up. We go through a whole process of, we'll call it dying from bodies, but our consciousness grows. And we eventually go back to a state of being a soul, which is like sort of way more conscious than we are right now, but it isn't like God, but it's a great being. And that's who we really start out being. We're just in a limited state right now because we're limited by the dimensionality and the form that our spirit presently is in. That's all. It's not a big deal. I know a lot of people think it is. But, you know, here's the point that's most important to understand. And that is with asymmetry and the fact that the alpha constant changes and a thing that's part of the alpha constant called the quantum constant changes, our thought has a much greater effect on our surrounding energy and form as we change from one dimension to another. And, you know, this has been known about for a long time, except nobody put it together. In other words, this whole dimensionality change, if there's asymmetry in physics, people have actually figured out some of this stuff, but nobody accepted it, so it's like been left on the shelf. Well, we better take it down, because I got to tell you, without this stuff I'm telling you about in metaphysics, there's no hope. I'm positive they're not going to be able to figure out what the universe is like. They're going to get more and more confused, and they being most of astral and quantum physicists and string theorists, they're all going to kind of be banging their head against the wall because they need to include spirit, the other two parts of God's mind, with energy. You got to include God or you can't figure out the whole system. Yeah. How do you like that? Now, I'm not talking about this like it's a religion. I'm talking about it like it is. Without God, it doesn't work. And that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. Who wants to be in a universe where all there are containers and all the containers are bumping into each other, but there's no meaning to it? Life without meaning, what sense is that? This produces tremendous meaning. It explains why there is a universe in the first place. It explains what the universe is doing and why it's growing. God is growing. Remember? Life grows God. Life is growing the universe. And, of course, the universe is growing at an increasing rate because life is increasing. Yes, fascinating. And as life gets closer and closer to intelligent activity, the space in the universe grows, but the space between life becomes less. In other words, we become closer to each other while the space of the universe itself is growing. It's a weird kind of concept. It's growing only in the perspective of the energy part, only in the perspective of energy. Eventually, all of energy will become intelligent activity, and all life will be connected through light instead of space. Space eventually becomes light, and the universe becomes connected through one brilliant, brilliant, brilliant light. That's where we're headed. Don't worry about it. Things are not going to fly apart. They're talking about the galaxies are going to get so separated, none of us will be able to connect with anybody else. No, that's not going to happen. What's going to happen is all the darkness that is out there is going to eventually turn into light, and we're all going to be connected. Hey, good stuff is happening. It's just that we're worrying about the silly things and not seeing the obvious. Really. The obvious is that we're all part of one, and we're growing towards that one, and that one is so much greater than what we perceive as our universe right now, that's what's going on, and we shouldn't be frightened by it. We shouldn't be afraid of it. Those black holes, well, they have to move energy from one place to another. It's necessary because energy cannot stay bound. It can't stay in one place. It has to be a movement, and eventually the movement has to become more and more intelligent. And only spirit can help that to happen. Very important understanding of that. Now, I know I've jumped around, and I'm covering a huge, huge, huge subject in a very short time. Tonight, we don't have the luxury, and I don't think we ever will be, again, of going more time. The last few weeks, we were given a little more time, thank you very much, to the radio station itself. But, you know, there's other people that have to get on the air, and so at 7:55, I've got to get off the air. Yeah, but that's okay. I don't mind. Because, at the same time, it allows us to be disciplined about how I'm going to explain all this and not probably yak my head off about every other kind of thing. All right, so spirit, by joining with energy in more and more intelligent ways and creating higher levels of consciousness or love, while it does so producing greater levels of freedom of thought in all of life and in itself, is creating the effects that we're seeing. It's life itself that is producing the very things that are happening. And it's because the universe is equally distributed in intelligent activity. God equally distributed so that all of life would have an equal chance at producing itself and creating itself. If there was an unequal distribution of this thing called intelligent activity that produces energy, then we would have some parts of life being favored over others, and the universe would be somewhat contaminated by the thought of its creator to a level in which life itself would be interfered with. Now, I don't think that God is going to do that. And that's the reason I wrote it that way so many years ago. I tried to explain it, did a little bit of the math myself, put some of it in Life's Hidden Meaning. I try to keep as much math out of it. If you want to know more of the math, call me. If you're a physicist and you want to know more of the math, and you want to know more about this whole subject, let's get together. I'd love for you to write some papers about it. I'm not supposed to. I'm kind of the metaphysics guy. I'd like to get together with someone who is on the physics side. Let's join forces and produce some interesting math and some interesting, we'll call it, answers to a quagmire that presently exists in physics. Now, if you would like to talk to me more about this, you can. You can email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. Also, I'm going to be talking on supernatural powers. Ugh, what is that? Well, that's what happens when we develop ourselves in greater consciousness on Monday, June 18th, over at Mesa Fiesta Borders from 7 to 8:15, if you happen to be in the Phoenix metropolitan area. If not, well, in any case, it's been great talking to you this evening. And until next week now, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is, and I want you to think about this. If there's any way that I can be of service to you, you give me a call, and we'll talk more about it off the air as well. Okay, till next week, I'll talk to you then.